You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of December 16th, 2020, and welcome to the 6th annual Gamey Awards. Dun, da, 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 da.
Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Alpore.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. And oh, it is the most exciting time of the year.
I'm wearing my bow tie.
We got our bow ties. We got our tuxes. We have shaken hands with Meryl Streep, Brad Pitt. The whole crew's out here tonight. For the 6th annual Gamey Awards, if you are a first-time listener, this is a great episode to start on, in my personal opinion. If you're a long-time listener, you may know what this is. Every year, for the past 6 years, we have created our own GODY Award show where we like to... I think originally it started by us making fun of the Game Awards.
I believe so. Take that, Keeley.
But now, you know, the Game Awards have matured... The Experience Points podcast has kind of matured.
Game Awards have matured and, might I say, sold out, and we're just keeping it real.
We have some favorite categories from past years. We have some new categories making a first appearance, some of which I'm very excited by. 2020 has been a very rough year for a lot of people, and I think it's only right that we start with our first category.
Yes.
The 2020 Lockdown Game of the Year Award.
Lockdown. You're in your house. You can't move. There's a plague all around you. What game is helping you forget the reality that you live in for one fleeting moment?
Exactly right. What is the perfect game to turn to when there's literally nowhere else to go? Okay. The nominees are Jackbox, Hades, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Spelunky 2, Among Us, and Blazeball.
So here's the big... I think this is going to be the defining feature of this category is this a category that talks about a game that helps you connect with the people you would want to be connecting with? Or is this about a game that lets you just kind of hole up and fully escape into something better?
It's a good question. I think the answer to this question has shifted over the course of the quarantine. Mm. If you recall, there was a brief period where everyone was like, oh no, we're stuck at home. Let's do Zoom hangouts.
Right.
Let's drink. Let's do like office parties, but on Zoom. The number of those have shrunk until now. It's really only like the core people that you actually like. And all of those other ones have flown out the window. So Jackbox, one of those games. That was a game where... I would say maybe, April, May, June? I was still getting some play in groups.
Yep.
But that whole Jackbox thing kind of burned up in the atmosphere after a while. And now I'm flying a little bit solo.
Flying? You
know? Microsoft Flight Simulator, pun intended there.
I mean, that Microsoft Flight Sim has the added benefit of travel escapism too.
Yes. And even Among Us is the same way too. I have a group of coworkers that I play Among Us with, and there was a brief window where we were playing a lot, and then we stopped for one reason or another. There wasn't quorum to really get that off the ground.
Right.
I think we have found in quarantine that even though everyone's stuck at home, the time and scheduling people to play together, still not an easy thing.
Yes.
Still not an easy thing. So in my opinion, I think we have to give this award to a single-player game.
Okay. So the game that I spent a lot of time with this year is definitely Hades. Like, if I was stressed out and if it was 3 a.m, I was definitely playing Hades.
Hades is also about futilely trying to escape... a hell place.
Yes.
So I feel like, just thematically speaking, it resonates, you know?
Yes. Weirdly enough, Hades has a much happier ending.
Well, the other thing is, do you think that you are saddened when you're in Flight Simulator and you're like soaring over San Francisco and yeah. you're just like, oh, I can't. You know what I mean? Does it remind you too much of the realities outside right. your house?
Well, it was cooler when they found that obelisk inside of Microsoft Flight Sim 2, but it was just a glitched out building that had gotten set That's to an infinite height. That's a billion feet
high. Yes.
I think for me it might be Hades.
I think it has to be Hades because I think this is the most sincere category that we have
yeah.
this year. And I do think that Hades...
Waifu and Husbandu might have a word about
that's
that.
That's true. I think Hades will help you get through and it forces you to be focused, you yeah. know, like really put things aside.
It's a flow state type of game.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be Hades.
Okay, Hades. There it is. Bolded. It is locked in. There 2020 lockdown game of the year.
Yeah, congratulations, Supergiant Games, your first Gamey Award. Let's see if they sweep the show tonight, folks.
I know. All right, next category. Hopefully, the first and last time this category will ever come into play. It is the hopefully first annual. Did that come out, or was it just buried under the crushing weight of this hellish year award?
These are the games that we want to recognize because... we didn't recognize them when they first released. We just never played them for one reason or another, I assume. Or maybe we did play them.
Or we forgot about
no one
them.
Talked about yeah. them. We were a little bit busy with any number of, you know, locusts. This was, I think this was the same year as those Japanese bees or wasps, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The
remember when that was a small issue? The murder hornets. The murder hornets, right. Yeah. All right.
Okay, the nominees of this category are Kentucky Route Zero, the final chapter, mm-hmm. Dreams, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, Neo 2, Half-Life Alyx, Star Wars Squadrons.
Oh, man. Did Neo 2 really come out this year already?
I believe it came out this year.
Can we try something? I'm going to say my pick, and you're going to say your pick at the same time, and we'll see if it's the same.
Okay.
Maybe we did it. We just unlocked the best way to go through this list. Are you
ready? Now we're going to do this for all the categories.
Okay, it'll go 3, 2, 1, and then name, okay?
Okay, got it.
All right. 3, 2, 1, Dreams.
Dreams.
I knew it! Because here's the thing. I didn't know what Dreams was going to be
yeah.
when it was revealed and released. Because it's a little bit confusing, right? There's like right. VR stuff going on there. Like, you make your own world. I don't know. The fact that it has come out, I believe, maybe it hasn't, tells me that no one really figured out what it was. And we yeah. still don't know what it is.
Well, there was a run up to it as well. Like, there was beta access to it. Like, people were actually making things. I remember there was a time there where every once in a while you just see like a super crazy or cool thing pop up and like, oh, this is built in Dreams. That's what I was doing. And then all of a sudden that stuff kind of faded away. So I was never quite sure if it came out or not. Like, it was a very mysterious game.
Right. Was Cyberpunk 2077 made in Dreams?
Maybe. Probably would have been more stable if it was.
It was, I mean, to be fair, yeah, that would have been an existing engine, so that's good. All right, well, Dreams, congratulations.
Oh, I, you know, now that we have this, I just looked it up. It was released on February 14th, 2020.
Oh God, what a terrible way to start the year, right?
And now so I kind of want to, after this, I want to take a look at some of the what people have been doing in it. I mean, it just seems like this year of all years, I can totally imagine someone creating a magnum opus in this game.
This is like a video game that launches on 9/11, of which I'm sure there was one, you know?
Right.
Man, wild.
That was hilarious. All right, what's our next category?
All right, our next category is the prettiest game of the year.
I think we've been doing this one for 6 years. This is a perennial.
This is a perennial. We like to honor some of the prettiest games out yeah. there. This year's nominees are Ghosts of Tsushima, or Ghost of Tsushima, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Final Fantasy VII Remake, The Last of Us Parts 2, The Pathless, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, and Spider-Man Miles Morales.
I feel like this is an extremely strong category. Like, all of these yes. games are outstanding looking.
I will ax right off the bat The Last of Us Part 2, because it is both the prettiest and the ugliest game of the year.
Right. It is. So you're axing it on the basis of this should be a pleasing game versus a high fidelity, terrible world.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Exactly. Because there's too much gore and very ugly themes that are involved in that game.
Right.
So.
Okay. Hmm. Flight Simulator looks pretty good.
I mean, it, honestly,
those cockpits look amazing.
I mean, my gut says Flight Simulator. There's just something about the slow, gradual. Here's something that I think is really nice, and maybe we'll talk about this later in a new category this year that I'm excited to talk about. But I think that Microsoft Flight Simulator is only offering you the game that is in its name. Like there is no. All of the footage that I've seen or you know, I've watched some people play on Twitch, the experience is nothing but a flight simulator, but one that uses the Google data to such a stunning effect that it doesn't need to be anything more than what it is. You know? And the beauty that we find in Flight Simulator is the beauty that just actually exists in the world. You know? Like the cities that you're going over, the landscapes that you're going over are real, and it just... in this, you know, gorgeous fidelity. It doesn't have the Miles Morales ray tracing.
I was just going to ask about that. Like, it feels like Miles Morales might be a contender here too, but I didn't play it, especially I didn't play it on the high fidelity settings.
Well, here's the problem though. I would rather play at a buttery smooth 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
And so I disabled ray tracing to do that. So I didn't see the prettiest. I did a little bit, and it is a very pretty game. Definitely. Absolutely.
Ghost of Tsushima has a pretty good looking world. I mean, especially when you start to like really mess around with the camera, and you know, there's a bunch of filters and how they set up the there's nothing but petals everywhere, just cherry blossoms and petals flowing around you in that game.
Can we give a gamey's props to photo modes and video games? They have come a long way.
They really have. That was one of the most sophisticated ones I've ever seen in that game.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. The Last of Us 2 also had a beautiful photo mode.
But what do you think? You think the combination of the magnificent globe that we live on plus the immaculate recreation of airplanes maybe takes the cake here?
Who did we give it to last year? Do you remember?
I do not remember, but I can check it out in just... a second.
Because I feel like every year we go back and forth between, do we want the game that is honoring this fidelity, the, you know, advanced poly count, beautiful textures, or do we reward the game?
This is like, the beauty of this category. We can leave it up to whichever the year is. And for 2019, it was Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Oh, that was a pretty game. That's a very pretty game. Very pretty soundtrack.
The category works.
I would say this year let's buck last year.
Yeah.
And go with the fidelity thing. I put my hat in the ring for a flight simulator.
I'm fine with that because there was definitely times when I saw screenshots and videos of that game and it was that classic, is that a real picture or is that a video game?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's something about the I like your point about the there is a certain plainness. There's a certain
wow. Well,
thanks for joining, everybody. We're not going to get better than that. But
then Scott was winging that one.
It's not trying to do anything but exactly what it's doing. To your point,
yes.
And and what it does is photorealistic majesty.
Yes. Although I will say I would take a dogfighting simulation version of that. Although cockfighting too. Fuck it. Put some chickens
look
in
at those feathers.
Have your biplane just go over an illegal cockfighting arena for a few times.
You have to have the cockfights on a plane because you're in international airspace.
Is there a flight sim mod where you can be like that asshole flying a huge banner that says like shop at auto body repair or whatever, you know? And just flying around an arena?
Oh man, maybe that's where the mod scene comes into play. But look, let's lock that in.
Where's the Goodyear blimp DLC?
Yes, yeah. Well, Goodyear has to pay for it. Congratulations, Microsoft Flight Simulator. You're the prettiest game of 2020.
Well done. Okay, the next category.
All right, next category here. The trending gaming character of the year / character that would be the best social media influencer.
I love this one because this is
an apocalyptic category here.
This is a category that has made its way into the gamies and into a variety of other reward shows every year where we honor like content creator of the year.
This was one of the things that started the gamies because the Game Awards it was 6 years ago or so. They started with doing trending gamer. Remember that?
Yes. I understand the amount of hard work and struggle that goes into being a content creator. I understand the skill involved, how some of them are teams, like all of that stuff. I cannot help but cringe at the thought of this type of thing, though. You know? It feels weird, which is perfect for the gamies.
The nominees for trending gaming character / character that would be the best social media influencer are Befika from Bugsnax. You can tell this is me writing this. I said the new League character that is literally an influencer, and then you helped me by writing Seraphine.
Yes.
Dionysus from Hades. Jesse from the Final Fantasy VII Remake. Rafi D. Sloth from Smoky 2.
Hell yes, dude.
And Fall Guy from Fall Guys.
Shout out to my boy, the Sloth, man. He seems like a nice guy, you know? Like, Rafi D. Sloth would have a baking channel on YouTube. Oh,
man. This is a tough category.
It really is.
Because there's some ones that are extremely obvious. Befika and Seraphine, literally influencers already.
Literally influencers already, yeah. Seraphine, man, we never really fully went into it on the podcast, but there is some fascinating, weird, you know, V-girl stuff going on in that whole realm.
Ugh. Dionysus, he was the original influencer, party boy from the ancient times.
And he influences the fate of Hades.
That is true, with alcohol.
One could say. I think Jesse from the Final Fantasy VII Remake... We're going to talk about her later, because I think that she has a very good chance of winning the Waifu Husbandu of the Year Award.
Yes, yeah.
Here's the thing. If you were a terrorist, you can't really be on social media, right?
But she's also an actor.
That's true.
She started off as a pop idol.
Oh, shit, you're right.
So she has that thing going.
She has the cred.
Yeah. How about Rafi D. Sloth? Can you imagine Rafi D. Sloth having his own YouTube channel where he talks about his like thrift store finds?
Yeah, that would be
sweet. I'm popping them tags.
But who would have a bigger social media following, though? Seraphine has an actual social media following, is the thing.
I feel like Seraphine is the second coming of, Lonely Girl 420 or whatever, you know. I feel like she is manufactured to the point that she could be disqualified.
That's fair. And in fact, she already received some criticism this year because she was tweeting about her mental health, which is difficult when she doesn't have a physical form.
Right, so, when she doesn't have a physical brain.
Yeah. You know what? I'm okay axing Seraphine. I think that makes sense. She's too doctored, if you will.
Yeah,
I would ask Dionysus because for somewhat similar reasons in that he is a god. You know, like can you be? That feels like you got to be an up and comer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but think about all of the various sweet hashtag ad endorsements he could do on Instagram.
That's true. Okay, but
now he'd be like, check this out, Zag. So, it's my new $2 chuck.
sleeper possibility, though. The Fall Guy from Fall Guys.
Oh, yeah. See, this is interesting. This is when I saw this, I was like, ooh, this is a dark horse that might take it.
This is the kind of, like, Instagram channel dedicated to one particular puppy. You know what I mean? The way that, like, there are some Instagram accounts that are just some random person's dog or cat.
Yes.
That have millions of followers. Right.
I was thinking about Fall Guy in terms of just Fall Guy doing the YouTube face, you know, the on every single thumbnail, where it's just Fall Guy seems like he is uniquely positioned to fit into that influencer category of influencers that are inexplicably popular.
And the type of influencers that target a demographic that go from like young kid tweens into adults as well, because he's full of Pratt humor, you know? Like Fall Guys has fallen down, he's putting himself in mixes, you know, getting hit with the hammer.
If this were 2012, Fall Guy would be planking on things.
Yes, and he would be one of the crossovers where he'd be on like Logan Paul's channel.
Oh my God. He would be boxing Logan Paul. Or Jake Paul. Which one?
Fucking box them both, man. Knock them both out for all I care. I think it's Fall Guys, my dude.
I think what a dark horse. It's Fall Guy. I'm calling it. Let's lock it. Fall Guy. Here's the thing. Fall Guy.
If you found out that any of these individuals already had like a fan-made YouTube channel, you would be the least surprised by Fall Guy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know?
That's true. And he came out of nowhere. I mean, he's not trying very hard. You know, Befika obviously is in there, but she's trying to be an influencer. Fall Guy is just, he's ordained.
Yep, Fall Guy. Congratulations, Fall Guy. You did it. You like fell and subscribe. Into the lead. All right. Another classic category coming up.
Oh, yeah.
The next category is the biggest gear grinder of 2020. A lot. So these ones are just focused on video games. I want that to be clear.
Yeah, because we would have put, you know, racial injustice. I mean, we could have put that for every year. But, I mean, we just have at some point. We just have to.
Okay, here we go. Some of these we've complained about on the show. Some of them are brand new. So buckle up. First up, Cyberpunk 2077.
Just
the whole thing. Animal Crossing also as a whole. New console launch mess. All of the launch console problems. Related to that, new console scalpers.
Oh my God. So annoying.
Another topic that we talked about, you and I, about having an episode on the podcast that I don't think we ever did. The Epic versus Apple slap fight. and last but not least, the inaccessibility of Crusader Kings 3.
Let me start from the bottom real quick, because I didn't play Crusader Kings. So talk to me about what grinded your gears about Crusader Kings.
I want an in. You know, I want the game that welcomes me with open arms into the weird, incestuous, alternate history, murder my own father.
Literally incestuous.
Like Crusader Kings. This is a franchise, by the way. I own pretty much all of the Crusader Kings except for the latest one.
Right.
And every single one I have played for approximately 15 minutes, and I said, this is way too much. I gotta back away from this thing. It is a storytelling engine. I want to find a way in, but never has anyone ever convinced me that Crusader Kings is accessible in any way. There's just so much mountain to climb, and I want to like it, and the new one came out this year, and yet again, this is not the one. This is not the one for me. Where's my Monster Hunter entry, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is the... Because every once in a while, you will get an entry into the series, be it Civilization, or be it even something like, you know, Bloodborne, whatever, like anything.
Yes, yep.
You know, there will be a game that will shepherd you, and this one isn't it, basically, is what you're saying.
Exactly right. Mm. Exactly right. And this is a gear grinder category. All of these problems are quite petty and unimportant.
Exactly.
And that one feels like especially petty and unimportant to me. So there you go.
Ah, man. I feel like the scalper stuff is so irritating to me because it's irritating on all sides. One, it's so obnoxious to do scalping. Like, it's so obnoxious to buy, 100 PS5s and then sell them for double the price. I'm also pissed off at the people buying them for double the price.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pissed off at everybody in that situation. I'm pissed off at the retailers for not, like, actually thinking about what's going on and why are, you know, maybe maybe people need 2 or 5 at the most consoles. You know, like, what are we doing? And then I'm pissed off at the idiots that have too much money to spend on scalped consoles.
I think what makes this worse is this is also the year where people were hoarding toilet paper and hand sanitizer.
That's true.
For the same reason. Yeah. You know? I'm just sick of fucking scalpers.
Yeah. Here's I am problem, also though. Sick of the entire cyberpunk community, though.
Oh, God, man, what a mess. What an absolute mess. The whole thing is just nowhere good. You cannot turn and find anything good right now around cyberpunk. Although, allegedly, some parts of the game. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it's but that's the thing. Like,
the bugginess, the defensiveness of it.
Exactly. It almost feels like the game is a victim of its own fans because everyone... You know, it seems like the game is a resounding fine, but then the weirdness of the, it really feels like the people, it really feels like the old days of like Nintendo and Sega zealots, but just they are now localized to certain games.
Specific games. Yeah. The Epic and Apple fight. I think we characterized it as aliens versus predators, right? Where no matter who wins, we lose scenario.
I would be willing to scrap that one because it's less of a gear grinder and more of this is just depressing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's too big.
This is like Galactus versus Ultron or what's his face, you know, from the Marvel movies where it's like it's happening at a cosmic scale that is whatever, you know.
That's good. It's Silver Surfer versus
versus Galactus, and it's like, you know what, I'm sure that battle is happening somewhere, but I'm just a mere mortal.
That makes sense. Animal Crossing, I feel like we've shit on that game enough, you know. So maybe give them a pass this time.
I think it might go, I might be pulling for the scalpers in this category.
I think so too, because here's the thing, I don't think that the scalpers are new. You know, we've dealt with scalpers.
Exactly.
I mean, they scalp movie tickets. They scalp concert
shows. Literally
shows,
anything. Like anything that people are interested in, there's going to be a weird, like, oh, well, we're just going to... It's inventing scarcity, which is super annoying.
And this idea that they're just engaging in normal capitalism is such a bullshit excuse. Like, already fuck normal capitalism as it is.
Right.
you're just adding, like, shit onto that particular sandwich.
Right.
Yeah, right. You know what? Here's the thing. We have to use our platform to tell these people to go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
So
the biggest gear grinder of 2020, a resounding go fuck yourself to the new console scalpers.
next year, we're going to change just the go fuck yourself category of 2021.
Ah, that was cathartic. I like it.
Okay. This category is your brainchild. So why don't you launch us into this one? This is one of my new favorite additions.
All right. So this is the first annual Most Baffling Nintendo Action of the Year Award.
Yep.
We all know and love / hate Nintendo. We know that they make extremely baffling decisions about how they run their business and make their games. And this is a collection of things that they did this year that are just extremely strange. And the nominees are releasing Super Mario Brothers 35 and Super Mario Brothers 3D All-Stars for a limited time.
God damn.
Continuing to antagonize the Smash community, another fucking sword character in Smash, and cease and desist for Etikon Joy-Con skins sold for charity.
Man, I was trying to... So I was talking to Nicole today about how much I liked this category, and I was explaining the Joy-Con debacle.
Yeah.
And her answer was like, well, you know, why does Nintendo do that? Do they get away with it? And I told her, like, no, people drag them in on social and they get dragged in the press, like, but they're fucking Nintendo.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Not buy the next Mario game?
Right. Like things move on.
Yeah,
man. Wild. Every single one of these is fucking wild.
Well, that's, I mean, in that case, you may have resolved that one as not the winner because it's completely logical for them where it's like, oh, cool. We get to shut this guy down, defend our, the only thing that's baffling is that it was for charity. And so now
that to me is the icing on top, right? Yeah. Like it is for charity for people who, it's suicide prevention. Like it's not even like a risky topic, right. You know? It's exactly, not like yeah. support, like, oh, he was selling those to support the Georgia runoff election, you
right,
know?
Right, like, it's like, well, he was supporting them to, like, support Israel or something. Like, no, this is yeah. just, like, a unmitigated good.
Although, side note, I would be fascinated to know what are on those Joy-Cons that support the Israeli state. let's take this the sword one and throw it out the window, because I feel like that one is just, it is dwarfed. It's bullshit, but it's yeah. dwarfed by all of these other three.
It's just
the Smash community thing. It's just fucking like they yeah, put in so much. They want.
It is baffling that Nintendo continues to shit on that community at every turn when they are the ones that have kept Smash alive.
Okay, maybe we should remove the charity one, because even though that one pisses me off the most, I think there's certain like legal obligations yes. maybe yeah. on their part where they're like, oh, we're obligated, we don't want to, we're right. obligated to defend our you know IP. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I see the logic. The Smash community is crazy. I mean, like, the latest thing was that they shut down a Melee tournament because they claimed that they were using some weird, you know, emulators. But it's like, these are people playing Melee. They love your game so much. Like, you're making $0 off of Melee. Why would you go after these people?
I think it has to be the Melee one, because of all of these categories, this is truest to the term baffling.
But think about this, George. Think about this. They are going to stop selling a video game in March.
Do they have a game they're running against it? Like, is there a Nintendo game dropping in March that they're competing against themselves?
But I mean, Maybe. Who does Mario compete against? There's no way. Like, there's no way that it's anything but additive. But
this is the Disney Vault thing we talked about, right? It's like artificial scarcity. It's what the scalpers are doing.
Man, it might be. But here's another baffling thing about this category. There are two things here. Super Mario Brothers 35 is like the Tetris 99 of Super Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost anything additional. All you have to do is be a subscriber to the Nintendo service that you are anyway. They're going to delist that too.
Yeah, why not just have that going at all times?
They're going to shut it down.
To always incentivize.
Exactly. And then it's something about delisting a digital game is madness to me. Like, not only are they going to stop printing Super Mario Brothers 3D All-Stars discs, they're going to just stop selling it, period, even on the eShop.
This is why this category needs to exist, because every single one of these things on this list, save for maybe the sword character, I will give you that, is genuinely baffling. Because I think in any other year, we would have a category that's like stupid shit someone did this year,
right.
2019, and Nintendo would always be on the list, right?
Right.
But this year, it's just their own category. Like, let's just give it to them at this point, you know? I'm willing to give it to you for the Super Mario Brothers 35 thing.
I'm trying to think about whether the Super Mario Brothers 35, definitely, it's the first time they've done something like this. Whereas the Smash thing, they just keep doubling down on being difficult towards this community.
Yeah.
A community that has basically dragged their game into Evo.
Yeah. And individuals have said they will stop playing Smash now as a result.
Man, this is a tough one. How do we
Can we just give it to them for all of the categories? For the first time ever.
Nintendo, look,
no matter who everything no is matter baffling. Who wins this category, Nintendo is losing this category, you know?
There has to be something to
I think it's gotta be the limited time. I think you convinced me, because that is one where I just don't even see why. Like, the 35, like, it's in a world where people are adding content to streaming services out of desperation, right? We see yeah. Warner Brothers releasing 21 blockbuster films right. on HBO right. Max for a month on the day of the in-theater release date this coming year.
Right.
Desperate to get people on board to HBO Max subscriber base. That they would remove a piece of content from the subscription value that they launched specifically and only on that service makes no fucking sense to me.
That's a great point, actually, because it's you have to have the subscription to get the game. So they're taking away a reason why you would
keep subscribe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man, what the fuck's going on over there?
What is going on over there?
All right, let's lock it in. Let's lock it in.
There's an evil man in an office somewhere who's just like cackling.
Oh my God. Okay, so here it is. Releasing Super Mario Bros. 35 and Super Mario Bros. 3D All-Stars for a limited time, the most baffling Nintendo action of the year.
Congratulations, Nintendo. Come on. All right, here's the next category. This one, we are graduating into a category of its own based off of a winning category last year, and that is Death Stranding Presents 2020's Most Superfluous Game Mechanic. And the nominees are Petting Cerberus in Hades, Petting Your Eagle in The Pathless, Writing Haikus in Ghost of Tsushima, and Genital Customization in Cyberpunk 2077.
Well, I feel like I might be... I put the eagle thing on, but I feel like I might just contradict myself and say... there is kind of a mechanical reason. You know, if you take too much damage in some of those sequences, it will paralyze the eagle, and then you have to pet it to back in the action. So, like, there is some sort of mechanical impact in the game.
Yeah, yeah. I would also say that in Hades... I think that there is a cathartic experience because, you know, you spend so much time in this like hectic, stress-fueled battle in Hades, and you die and you're like, oh, I'm so frustrated. And I think it is very intentional that the natural path that you go, right, is you walk past the guy that says some snarky line.
Right.
It's like, oh, you died again. Welcome back. And then directly to Cerberus. And petting Cerberus, I think, rewards you or gives you the opportunity to unleash some of that stressful burden you've been carrying over the course of the game.
Right. What is there an argument to be made for genital customization for pure representation and roleplay reasons?
Okay. Yes, that's a great point. You could be a trans character or something like that.
Not just transhuman.
Well, here's the problem, though, right? The rest of the game doesn't respect that decision, right? It's not as though you embody a trans character and that becomes like a fundamental part of the story.
Right,
you just have different genitals. The other thing, it's not just penis or vagina. It's penis or like circumcised or uncircumcised penis for the genitals and the size of said penis. Surely the size of the penis, like, do we just, like, whose representation are we fighting for? Individuals with huge cocks? Like, is that is that the underrepresented person that we're trying to, like, watch out for? Also, they're flaccid penises on top of that. It's not like, you know, you don't get to, like, decide the girth of said erect.
Do the, like, the slider for grower or shower.
It's also very strange, because even then you can decide, like, you know, your, what kind of, manscaping you're doing down there as well, which has like surprisingly limited options. You know, it's like heart shape,
no lightning bolts.
Yes. Yeah, oh, so lightning bolts, heart shape, and I think what, airstrip?
Oh my God,
landing strip, and then like just full bush or none, I think are your options. But there's no skull. You can't like no happy face. Come on, Cyberpunk.
I think the haiku. I admire the haiku. But it is, it seems purely superfluous in that it gives you a headband.
Yes.
It's just a way to sit there and look at things.
Pretty things. It's a pretty game.
Pretty, but that's what I mean. Like that game would stand without that. It's a purely superfluous thing, but it's still a pleasant thing. I don't know. I feel like that is a strong. That and genitals, I think, are my two tops.
Yeah, haikus and genitals. Here's the thing about the haikus, though, right? And this is in favor of the genitals winning.
Mm-hmm.
The haiku will give you like a bandana or something when you do it, right? So you are incentivized to do it because you get a reward. And your haiku is thematically connected to the item that you're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, who likes to like role play, right? If I'm like, oh, I'm choosing the honorable haiku, and now I'm wearing the honorable headband that matches my haiku, that has the haiku on it, At least that feels good. You know, at least in that sense, I could see my haiku in the like the menu, you know, and I know it's meaningful. But if I'm wearing like pants, I can't see my genitals.
I feel like that. I feel like that's a good argument because the way that the genitals seem to be implemented is just kind of tossed in.
Yeah, the gen. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, you can. We need to be able to say that you can choose your genitals in this game, but we're not gonna have any meaningful. It is. It's just superfluous, just for the sake of you know maybe you know your initial character create or whatever.
Yes. And I, look, I know that I know how games work. I know that not everybody working on like little character models or big character models, depending on your customization choices, work on all types or parts of the game. But it's especially poignant that your penis size is an option.
Yeah.
But the T poses, the bugs, the game crashes, like all the other issues or inability to adjust particular settings, are not available.
Right. Right. All right. Genital customization, most superfluous game mechanic of 2020.
Congratulations. You did it, Cyberpunk. You won an award.
All right. Next up here. Next up is a first-time award as well from a podcast that we did just this year.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, we retrofitted George Orwell's rules, five rules of writing to George Orwell's rules for video games. You know, the placing a premium on elegance over everything.
Yep.
So we are creating a category called the George Orwell Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Pursuit of Elegance.
Yes. These are games that are elegant. They're trimmed back. They're clean. They're sharp.
They're exactly what they need to be. And they set out and achieve something very precise and something very elegant and something that would stand up to that the test of those rules. So we got Spelunky 2, Hades, The Pathless, Microsoft Flight Simulator, and Blazeball. So I talk to me about Blazeball.
All right, so I don't think we've talked about Blazeball on the podcast
yet. Yeah.
It's a game that I've only like dabbled my feet into.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a, and we'll talk in greater detail about this game later on for a very important category. But this is a web-clicking game about managing a sports team.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is systematized. Everything is a system in the game. And it's sort of randomly determined. And there's this constant like back and forth between what are the events in the game, like the weather patterns and who's on your team and what their skills are.
Yep.
And then fans who are voting on things, choosing their favorite players, you know, making fan art, making videos. There's something about taking the core concept of a fantasy league and trimming it into a randomly generated experience that is nevertheless found a huge following that I think is very elegant. They took a simple idea and ran with it.
I miss this game. I remember this game kind of flaring up, I don't know, halfway through the year or something like that.
Yes.
But I didn't spend any time with it. What are the verbs of this game? What are you actually doing in it?
You're not doing a whole lot. And maybe that's maybe for pro and con in terms of elegance. You are basically picking who you think is going to win in a given period of time and then betting on the results of a fictionalized, randomly generated.
So it is randomly generated.
Well, randomly. There are a whole lot of modifiers, though, right? Like a pitcher against a particular batter. The batter might have like 16 fingers and shoots lasers out of his eyes. And also, if it's raining blood, he'll grow wings and fly around the bases faster, right? And then that is fed into the algorithm against the pitcher who has all of these other things, and then it spits out the result. And
that's when I was reading about this game, it struck me as I got a little whiff of something like Dwarf Fortress. Is that correct, or am I mistaken?
In the sense that so much of the enjoyment that's going on around baseball are the quote-unquote, you know, players, people like right. you and I, not the baseball players,
right,
trying to decipher what is happening in baseball. Like, what are the systems? What are the right. rules? That is the actual effort. It's a right. game in which it's just an algorithm that is being tweaked by the developers,
right.
and the players are participating by trying to understand how that algorithm evolves.
Right, right. I mean, that's a strong argument. Then, I mean, let's see how does it stack up versus. These are strong games.
I for how much I think I want baseball to be recognized for its elegance, it doesn't totally fit in here because there are a lot of superfluous things like. Yeah. Every baseball player has a particular type of like coffee style that they prefer. That may or may not be involved in the mechanics. I don't know, but right. you know, there's a weird superfluous things like that. So not entirely elegant.
Right.
I actually do think the Spelunky 2 and Hades in particular, which in my mind, and I guess Microsoft Flight Simulator are the really lead contenders here.
Yeah.
These are truly elegant games in the sense that we will be talking about them come goatee conversations.
Right. I'm rereading the Orwell rules that we came up with. Do not use a secondary system, mechanic, or sequence simply because players will recognize it. Never make a long game when a short game will do. If it is possible to cut an interaction, cut it. Never take control from the player when you can give control.
Okay, so baseball is out from that previous one.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's because there's the sixth rule, right? Rule number five is when faced with a narrative design or linguistic decision, prioritize accessibility. True, number six, true. Break any of these rules in the pursuit of elegance.
Oh, man, what a great list of rules we came up with, Scott.
Because I feel like Spelunky 2 really walks the line on a couple of these. Like in terms of accessibility, Spelunky 2 is well nigh impossible without the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, how would I know how to do half of the secret stuff in Spelunky if I were to not look it up on the internet?
I mean, trial and error. Are you ever going to be good enough to do that secret shit anyway, though?
Fair point. Yeah.
There's two games there, right? Like one for the good people and one for you and I, the normal laymans.
And maybe that is an argument in favor then, because everyone can still find something from it.
You know what? I think Hades has to be the winner here. And the reason is because there are a lot of games that are randomly generated or roguelikes in the way that Hades partially is, where there's no good reason to continue to play once you're finished.
Yeah.
Like, you know, once you make those runs, you can continue to play, but there's no like narrative payout.
Right.
Hades is always advancing stories or giving you tidbits of story as you play.
Right.
There's just something really elegant about super giants solve for storytelling in a roguelike space.
That's a good, yeah. I was thinking about that because I was playing Hades last night and I realized I had played upwards of 150 hours of that game and was still pursuing parts of the story that I had not pursued.
I don't even think the Pathless is that elegant in its narrative.
Yeah.
You know, like it is very, everything's in these discrete portions and, you know, follows that flow.
Well, and I was also just for scientific curiosity, I was playing Bastion recently and just thinking about Hades and how much it owes to that game, but also how much further it's gone towards mechanical elegance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on board with that.
Well, and Flight Simulator depends what airplane you're flying, right? I'm sure some airplanes are more elegant than others, I assume.
If you're flying, you know, the Rescue Rangers' biplane versus, you know, the sleek SR-1 Blackbird or something.
Exactly. Or like Slave One, you know, you don't know.
All right, Hades.
All right.
George Orwell Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Pursuit of Elegance. Hades takes it.
All right. Moving us along, man. We still got a few more categories to go. Okay. Yeah. The most annoying Animal Crossing game mechanic of the year.
We don't have to spend a huge amount of time on this. I just am so pissed off at this game. I just had to put it in here.
It's got to be... Okay. Oh, right. So, sorry. Excuse me. The categories. I already just started getting mad about it. You just got so enraged
that... Yeah.
Okay. Couch co-op implementation.
Oh, my God.
the inventory and everything about it.
Yeah.
having to click through multiple dialogue boxes and confirmations to do simple transactions. Crafting one island per switch, but only one player can be the mayor.
This game is so disrespectful to the player. It's just almost breathtaking.
The couch co-op is egregious. I think that's great. Let's collapse that, though, into inventory, because that's the biggest annoyance. That is true. Right?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, you're right.
Well, but there's also the weird co-op thing of, like, they could destroy your island, or there's, like, other weird stuff.
Yeah.
Hmm. God, the dialogue boxes, though. I don't know. Here's the thing. I get so irritated by that stuff, but other people aren't bothered by it. I don't know why. I don't know why. What I mean, maybe I have lack of patience now, but...
I think the crafting thing is interesting because it's not, say what you will about crafting. I think there are times where, like in Minecraft, I think there are times where crafting makes sense because it adds drama to a situation where, oh no, I only have 5 arrows. Can I craft enough before the hordes come to get me? You know, that's meant to do something. There's a time pressure. There's something to be done. Whereas in Animal Crossing, it's like, ah, fuck, I broke my axe. There's literally no stakes other than me having to just irritatingly create a new axe to do the exact thing that I'd be able to do if it didn't break.
Yeah.
Like, there's no stakes. There's just no stakes in Animal Crossing, so why even have shit break and have you have to craft anything?
It's a time delay. I mean, this is Cow Clicker, Animal Crossing
2020 version. Cow Clicker. The one island per switch thing is buck wild as well.
That's super obnoxious, and there were so many complaints about it, and I don't know why that was not a known solvable issue. I mean, I feel the way about Animal Crossing the way that I've felt about Pokemon for years, where I'm just like, why is no one else mad all the time when they're playing this game? I would say crafting or inventory, because I still think the inventory is heinous.
Yeah. Because I mean,
the way that you manage it, like all of that.
Well, and like some shit stacks, some stuff doesn't, or some shit stacks to a certain point where it's like, if 5 peaches stack and 50 peaches stack, why can't 51? You know, like what is the arbitrary rule that like.
At least make it fucking 99 where like I would buy, ooh, can't fit that many digits there. Sorry, you know? Like at least that would make sense to me.
I'm also coming at this having played a lot of it co-op, same couch co-op, and having to explain to a 3-year-old why the second player cannot open the inventory even though you're doing the exact same thing is just mind-boggling.
Well, but most players will play Animal Crossing single player though, right?
I don't know. It's hard to underestimate how many switches are in multiplayer households, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And even the way that they implemented it. I mean, and you know what? It doesn't even have to, I don't know. Even if you visit other people's island, shit gets fucked up, you know, in terms of like what happens if you pick something up and like how you have to bring things back and all of that stuff.
Here's what I can say for me, by far, the thing that killed it most of the time was the multiple dialogue boxes. Like, despite how much we're hating about crafting, like, at least I could go and do it, right? I could go and fix that thing.
Right.
But, man, when all I wanted to do was donate shit to a museum, to have to be told that this guy doesn't like bugs every fucking time drove me off the wall.
And you can only speed up the things. There's no way to, like, skip it.
And per your point about co-op, like, visiting another island is a nightmare. The fact that everyone has to stop what they're doing to watch you leave.
Yeah.
Wild. And you have to leave because the inventory system's fucked up. Maybe it is the inventory system.
I think it has to be the inventory system. Because even the layout and like how it gets organized, I mean, there's just, it's like they've never seen a modern UI.
Yeah. Maybe they haven't. All right, well, inventory system. Congratulations.
Okay, congratulations. Most annoying Animal Crossing game mechanic of the year, the inventory and everything about it.
Wow. All right, cool. Gear grinder. Another gear grinder, we should say. Okay, now to a more cheery category.
Oh, one of my favorite. Sweet spring breeze.
the Waifu Husbandu of the Year Award, the category where we honor the most wifeable or husbandable characters from video games. This year's nominees are Meg from Hades, Thanatos from Hades, Jesse from The Last of Us Part II, Jesse Raspberry from Final Fantasy VII Remake, Isabella from Animal Crossing, and Miles from Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Man, this is a strong category.
I know, listen, I think Miles is under 18 still.
So it's better, so aware. We have to throw him out.
I'm aware, okay? I'm just saying, in the long run, you know, he's a keeper, all right?
Well, and also we could put it in the context of his high school friends or whatever. I mean, you know, there's like that emo Peter Parker or, you know, the nice, fun-loving Miles Morales. Who would you rather go with?
Yeah, oh, I mean, 100%. Miles Morales all the way, yeah. Yeah. You know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, though, regarding Jessie and her influencer status, I am genuinely surprised how much background lore they provided these characters. Yep. Jessie is like lovable and charming in a way that I never imagined her from the original Final Fantasy VII.
Yep.
And she is a clear front runner in my mind. Yeah. Meg, a lot of issues Meg has, you know? There's a lot to complain about. Also, look, when you marry one, you know, when this is a common saying, right? When you marry your partner, you're also marrying their family. All right? And Meg's sisters, not all there, okay? Thanatos, though, I think Thanatos is another one that stands out to me because this guy is there when you need him the most, you know?
Yeah.
He's down for a little bit of friendly competition.
Yeah.
He's a total hunk. He slays.
That's his entire job.
It's his whole job.
I also think, I mean, maybe he doesn't contend, but I think Jesse from The Last of Us Part II, pretty upstanding guy. You don't know where he's going, but he maintains the friendship through the whole game and really does care about those characters.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
And he's good in a fight.
I mean, not as good as Thanatos, though. Or Miles. I mean,
that's true. That's you true. Know? I mean, well, I mean, he's not... Yes, George, he's not the god of death, and he's not... he hasn't been bitten by a radioactive spider. Fair.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I don't know, though. Jesse's like... He's also always complaining in The Last of Us 2 about you risking your life.
Wah, wah. I got shot in the face.
He, like, shows up to save you, and then, like, I don't know. It does more harm than good.
I think
we're too annoyed about Animal Crossing to give it to Isabella, right? We can agree on that.
Yeah, I mean, but she's just so nice compared to everyone else in that fucking game. I feel it's always nice to have her greet you versus that bastard Tom Nook, you know?
That's true. That's very fair.
But I mean, I don't know. I think I'm with you. I think this is either Jesse or Thanatos.
You know, Jesse gets wrapped up in a lot of problems, though. You know what I mean?
But like, she gets wrapped up in a lot of problems because she cares. She's trying. Remember, her, she is trying to.
That's true.
She's basically trying to avenge / support her father, who was in the Mako reactor accident.
That's a good point. Yeah.
She's the crazy thing about her is she gets radicalized. She's a pop star, and then she is. She sees basically what Shinra is doing and joins Avalanche.
You're right. Yeah. You know what? It's got to be Jesse. Because Thanatos is also kind of like moody. You know, when you first meet him, he's very kind of like dour all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesse, the moment you meet Jesse, nothing but charm.
That's true.
You know?
Plus, she's good in that fight. So there's also... She is not the god of death. She definitely...
Not yet. Not yet. We don't know where the
secondary timeline.
Look, anything can go, all right?
What do you think, Jesse?
I think it's Jesse.
Man. Jesse Raspberry. Didn't know her last name was Raspberry, but that's fine. It's a long life. You get to know more about
your
partners.
It's okay. She'll change it when we wed. Actually, let's be honest. I would change my last name to Raspberry. That's great.
All right. Jesse Raspberry, waifu of the year. Thanatos, strong runner-up.
Strong runner-up. Yeah, great, great leftovers there for everyone else out there.
And the thing is, you know, regardless, you will meet Thanatos. No one gets away without meeting him.
Hey, this is the best thing about this category. It's till death do you part.
Right.
Right.
And then you go with Thanatos. And
then you go with Thanatos, you know?
Man, great.
Classic.
Oh, man. All right, here we go. Okay, two more. We're going to finish strong here. This is now the Wow, I Did Not See That Coming award.
Yes.
And the nominees are Halo being delayed, Cyberpunk actually being released.
Well, question mark on that one.
Microsoft buying ZeniMax, Among Us being inexplicably popular,
yep.
Microsoft shuts down Mixer, and they somehow pulled off the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
I think we could do what we did before. I'm just going to say what I think is the clear winner. Because to me, there's a clear winner. Yes. Clear winner.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know how you feel, but I'm hoping that if we're synced, you will agree right off the bat.
Okay.
And that clear winner is the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
I was going to say the same thing.
Like, what? No, look, and this is in a year where people are struggling to release movies at all, you know? They made a Sonic the Hedgehog movie. They came out with that disastrous... they redid it. The disastrous animation. We talked earlier, right, way back when, about the change. And our comment was, look, you can't fix a shitty script. You can't fix a bad movie just by changing the visuals. What does it matter, right? But they changed the visuals anyway. And while I haven't seen the movie, supposedly, it's not that bad.
Yeah, supposedly, like, it is a fine to acceptable to maybe even good for children movie.
I think I could have seen Mixer, buys happen, shit gets delayed.
Yeah.
You know, all of that stuff. Games come out of nowhere. Sonic, truly unpredictable.
Especially after they... I guess the thing that is most unexpected was after they went back to redo Sonic, it's like, oh, that movie's going to be a train wreck. It's like they're basically going into a 9-month crunch or whatever for this game.
And that happens all the time to films with better directors, better screenplays, better budgets, right? That when a movie goes into rewrites or goes into reshoots, potentially bad things are happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Right? Disastrous things could be happening behind the scenes. It is not an unfrequent occurrence in Hollywood.
Yeah. And Sonic? Yet somehow they had... Yeah. Yet somehow they pulled it off. Seemingly well enough to, like, seriously, potentially have a sequel to this inexplicably popular movie.
If you told me in January, or asked me, what is more likely to happen, George... that the Sonic the Hedgehog movie would be good, or that the world would be crippled by a debilitating epidemic, I would think that we would be crippled by a debilitating epidemic first.
And they're like, well, I got good news and bad news. both of them are going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Sonic the Hedgehog. You somehow pulled it off, and we did not see that coming.
It was coming so fast, we nearly missed you. All right,
take us home.
The titular moment, the gamiest game of 2020.
Whew.
These are the games that are just super gamey, a lot of mechanics, a lot to chew on.
Yep.
Gamey, gamey, gamey games. All right, here we go. The nominees are Animal Crossing, Genshin Impact, Hades, Ghosts of Tsushima, Fall Guys, Blazeball, and Cyberpunk 2077.
Again, I think a strong stable.
Very strong year. Very strong year. Past winners have been, Death Stranding, I believe, won Gamiest Game of the Year.
Yep.
Has Kojima won every year he was nominated? I think he has.
That's
Metal Gear, right?
Good question.
I think he won the first game he was the Metal Gear games.
I believe so, yeah.
Because there was a Facebook game inside of that game, and I think it was the clincher for the gamiest game. I love this category. It's why the gamies exist. I think it recognizes the games that are just, like, a lot there. I also love that Hades is nominated here as the gamiest game, but also Elegant, Because you could be elegant and still be gamey. We all agree.
It's not an inherently good or bad thing.
Right. Yes.
I think Fall Guys doesn't contend here.
I agree. There's too many big hitters. I think in a lot of years, and here's the thing. I think if Fall Guys had stuck with it, if Among Us hadn't eaten some of its lunch, right, and Fall Guys had remained this popular enigma that came around in 2020 because we were all stuck at home, it could still be in here. But I think it falls out that mix. And I will say, I think the same goes for Blazeball. I do think Blazeball is extremely gamey, specifically the way that there's a community that has burgeoned around Blazeball is incredible. Like, we're talking people have released whole albums, erotic fan art, right? long narrative stories, machinima. Like, there's so much work out there around the circumference of Blazeball. A gamey game creates those things just out of thin air, right? Yep. But rise and fall, you know, it's been a tumultuous year, unprecedented times, some folks have said.
Well, and I mean, you know, it sounds like the actual interactions with Blazeball pretty pared down, you know, in terms of like what you actually do in that game. Whereas something like Hades, you want some horny fan art. Whew, go on that Hades subreddit sometime.
That's true. You know what to me always locked in Hades as a contender in this category is when you beat the game and you unlock the ability to add on challenges.
Yeah.
And there's like 40. There's just like a weirdly large number of challenges to augment your experience. And you can just mix and match and make it your own weird challenge game. And there's bonuses for doing different ones in different categories. That is a gamey-ass game.
Let me tell you a little bit about Genshin Impact.
I have seen some friends play this on Discord. What is the deal? Like, what is this game? I've never, ever played it. I've never watched it. It looks like a weird Japanese mobile game to me.
Yes, it's because it's also on mobile. It's taking elements from open world games, especially Breath of the Wild, where you are traversing an open world, you can climb up anything, there's a stamina bar, all that stuff.
Really?
Except,
I would never have predicted that. I literally had no idea what Genshin Impact was until you just said that.
Well, yeah, it is an open world game in the style of Breath of the Wild, except that it's all anime characters, all teen anime characters.
Hell yeah.
Multiple characters that you have to get, and it's a gacha game. So you have to get the characters and the weapons and stuff from capsule rolls, basically.
Oh man, gacha games are super gamey by definition.
Exactly.
Because it's gambling on top of a normal game. Yeah.
So not only is it this weird open world game, it's also a weird anime game. It's also a weird loot crate game.
That's a good one.
I don't know if it contends because I think there's some extremely strong ones here, but there's something to be said for it. I don't know if it leaves it yet.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Animal Crossing, another good contender for all of the reasons that you named in terms of annoying shit, and yet it's still loved.
It's like its thing is collecting, but also I guess I will praise it in that if you have the patience, there's an amazing amount of customization that you could do in terms of how you set up your town, how you set up your own special stamps and flags and all of that stuff. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff in there that is ready for people that want to dig in.
So in my mind, this category is a competition between two games.
Okay.
And I'll just talk about them briefly now. The first is Ghost of Tsushima. And the reason is because in the past, we have awarded the winner of this category to the games that is gamey by ingesting almost cannibalistically elements of all these other genres.
Yes. Right?
And when we talked about Ghost of Tsushima, this was the open world game buffet. Like this is that genre embodied in a singular game.
Yep.
And I think in that way, easily could be a winner in any other year, right? Yeah. The other competitor is Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
Because not just of what is in the game, but everything that's happened around it over the past 2 weeks, right? Yeah. We're talking like fatal game crashing bugs. The, you know, the hype for this game was so high, and then it plummeted. And then people got really mad at the YouTubers that were hyping this game like a few months ago, which is its own weird fucked up cycle because you wanted people to hype this game for you because you were hyped, right? The game was announced, what, like 2012 or something? Like,
yeah, it's been so far back, for like a decade. Right?
They announced an official apology this weekend, started offering refunds on PlayStation and Xbox, and then Sony and Xbox said, no, you can't refund this game. What are you talking about? And started denying some of those refunds.
Oh, man.
Like, there's just, that game carries with it the gaminess of, like, you know, like a shark with all of those weird little fish clinging to it, you know? You're getting that and everything else with it.
There's a lot of, yes, there's a lot of feeders connected to it. So I was thinking a lot about Ghost of Tsushima as well, because when I was playing it, it was the greatest hits of all open world games. It's like, sweet, I'm going to climb a tower and do a thing. Now I have more of the map. Sweet, I'm going to find some secret keys and get some armor. I remember while I was playing Ghost of Tsushima, Hana was playing one of the old Assassin's Creed games, and we were literally doing the same quests.
Yeah.
Hana was like, hey, I'm finding some keys to get some legendary armor. And I was like, same.
Samesies. Here's what makes it even a bigger challenge in this fight, right? Ghost of Tsushima launched co-op DLC, wave-based fighting game.
Fuck, right? Yes. Yeah.
Narrative mode and raids. Like,
it has Destiny 2? It has to be Ghost of Tsushima, because they're trying to, not only that, they're trying to make it a live game too.
I think here's the thing. Cyberpunk is so close. Like, genuinely, I went, you know, because we look at this, we formed this list together, right?
Yeah.
And in my mind, I had settled on Cyberpunk. But then the more and more I thought about Ghost of Tsushima was like, there's so many gaminess in the game itself, right?
Yeah.
Cyberpunk is bringing a lot, because Cyberpunk is also GTA plus Fallout, right?
Yeah.
Like it carries with it that, but it is trying to be more. It is building on a genre that we don't have that much of. It is CDP, and so naturally there's like a lot of story elements and stuff. It is gamey, but a lot of, I think, what makes that gaminess is the stuff that comes with it.
Right.
But Ghost of Tsushima, man, it's just in that package. You pay $60, you got a gamey-ass game right there.
And that's the thing. Like, I think that goes back to our initial comment of it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I think that game is highly successful at what it does. And what it does is cram so many different elements from costume customization to wave-based multiplayer all in this one wild package.
You know, if someone were to ask me, oh, you know, I have a 14-year-old son who I just bought a PlayStation 5. What game should I get them?
Right.
You can't go wrong with Ghost of Tsushima. It looks gorgeous. It will play well on your system, unlike Cyberpunk 2077. Yeah. Right? You can play co-op. It's a bit more family-friendly. There's an overarching story. There's live content. Like, there's raids. Like, it scratches a lot of itches. And I think you're right. I think it has to be our gamiest game of the year.
Man, the ghost.
Ghost of Tsushima
snuck into this category and like a disrespectful ninja versus a honorable samurai has stolen the category.
One day I will build a gamiest game of the year shelf upon which I will lay a disc version of each of these year's winners. Like, I would love a visualization. Maybe like one day I'll buy a poster frame and buy the discs of each of these games and just fix them to the wall with the year, 2015, 2016, 2017.
We should do that each in our house. Oh, man. Okay.
And build it? Yes.
Yeah, that's our 2021 project.
Hey, if we're still stuck at home, we'll have time to kill.
There we go. Man, all right. Well, let's call it then. Genshin Impact. Now, Ghost of Tsushima. gamiest game of 2020.
Yikes.
Man. What a wild year this was.
What a wild year indeed. Thank God it's almost over.
And we're not done yet. We haven't done video game of the year yet.
That's true. Yeah. So next week is our GOTY conversation, where we'll talk about some of the favorite games that we play this year.
Yeah. Then we got a little bit more serious than this one, but
a little bit, just a wee bit more serious. Although some of the games on this list may be on that. Hey, watch out. Then we do leftovers, some of the games that were important but maybe didn't make our top three. And then we're in 2021, and we survived it.
We survived it, and a whole new year of video games lies sprawling ahead of us.
One can hope.
All right, let's leave it there for now. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thank you for the gamies.
Yeah,
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. I would encourage you to listen to our past gamey podcasts. They're always a treat. You can find them all on our website or wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Contribute to our Patreon for our Gamies Hall of Fame that we're going to build once lockdown is lifted.
Yeah, we'll raffle it. We'll raffle it online.
Thank you so much for joining. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We very much appreciate it. Like George said, we'll be back next week with GOTYs. Until next time, take care, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time.